Hi, I'm Carlos Sainz, and you are listening F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you are not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. With the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host, Nasser Hamid. We'll be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 468, October 28th, 2010. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by the new 2011 Motorsports Memories Calendar Americana. Now on sale on our website. Get one, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, Berger says Mark did it on purpose. Will Ferrari win the championship because others have no team orders? Mercedes Grand Prix could be the ones to beat in 2011. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers, and yourself?
Okie dokie, as they say over here.
In the Finoki?
In the Finoki, yes. No, good. Our next Grand Prix is Brazil.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be exciting. We could have rain. It could be all over the place. People have to fight to win. And, of course, Ferrari, Montezemolo, speaking at the factory, telling everybody to stay calm. It isn't won yet. Keep your feet on the ground. The whole schlemiel and schlemazel.
Yeah, we have the lead now, but Mark Webber had the lead last week, so get a clue.
Yes, but the thing is, they're pretty close now. It's got to be pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot, definitely a lot more tense amongst the leaders.
Absolutely. Fernando Alonso is up 11 points on Mark Webber. And a lot of people are talking, what is McLaren going to do? Is Jenson Button going to help Lewis Hamilton?
Jenson's opportunity to win the championship basically means the other four in front of him don't finish the next race for him to truly have an opportunity.
Exactly. So that's why I think some strategy needs to be developed here at McLaren and at Red Bull.
Yeah. And who was it that was saying that Mark Webber wrecked in order to try to catch
Fernando or Hamilton?
If he wanted to catch somebody else in the wreck, wouldn't he have run into them instead?
Well, the bizarre thing, it's the former owner of Red Bull, or part owner, and that it's Gerhard Berger.
Yeah.
And he's a straight-up, stand-up guy. I mean, this is stuff that I was surprised to see Gerhard say.
Yeah, it doesn't...
It's out there.
Is he trying to protect Mark from his mistake?
Well, they're saying that once he hit the wall, if he had held the brakes, he shouldn't have wandered back out onto the track, which took out Nico Rosberg. He says, people are saying that he should have locked the brakes there and stayed up against the wall, but he did it on purpose, sort of drifted into the track, hoping, as he saw Fernando and Lewis Hamilton coming, taking one of those guys out, that means, you know, that would have helped him out a lot, especially since he knew he was out of the game.
Yeah. But, you know, last time I crashed a car into a wall, had a hard time keeping my foot on the brake.
I'm just saying.
and considering the condition of his car after he hit the wall, his brakes may not have helped him much.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. When you're, you know, obviously the wheel had been sheared off the front end. Hydraulics probably
gone.
Yes. So
he probably didn't have any brakes at that point, or if he did, they lasted for about that long until all the brake fluid gushed out the other side.
Exactly, and that's what happens when you sever hydraulic lines. It's gushing.
Big time.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure where this is coming from.
Yeah, it just seems a little bit over the top.
It is a little bit over the top.
You know, I can see maybe his idea, but the fact of it even being feasible is pretty slim.
I understand. I agree. But there you have it. It's going to be tense in Brazil.
Especially if it gets wet again.
Not only that, but there's a good possibility that Fernando could take the championship in Brazil if people have bad luck and bad karma. That mojo, you know, the voodoo of Brazil.
Yeah. Well, Fernando knows about Brazilian voodoo, so you don't know.
And Felipe's got to help Fernando.
And Felipe knows all about Brazilian karma. So
I don't know. This is going to be very, very interesting race. It's going to be exciting, and I'm talking the edge of your seat exciting.
Yeah. Well, I think Fernando's got one real Achilles heel, and that's his motor situation.
Well, you know, I don't know. The Ferrari is, well, if there's a problema, it's usually Felipe.
Well, not only that, but he has no new motors, so whatever he runs is going to be on a minimum of a second race.
Minimum. But the road motors are supposed to go three races.
Right. But,
I know.
Let me see. How many races on the engine that was in Sebastian Vettel's car?
Three. Well, it was on 2.5. So, no, it's a bit. But, you know, I think they can get those little scopes and go through the spark plug holes and check the wear of the engine.
Yeah.
You know, before and be prepared.
And do they get absolutely no rebuilding? So
no.
You can't go back and put in new rings or anything like that?
I mock you, Steven. No, there's no new rings and stuff like that. No, these are sealed, units. They can do a few things. I think fuel pumps, manifolds, stuff like that.
Yeah, well, all that stuff is not technically part of the engine, really.
Exactly.
It's more of the infrastructure of the car.
So, it's going to be very interesting. And a kablamo for Fernando could be
devastating, too.
Oh, gosh. So, it's going to be very thrilling, very exciting, because we're at the end of the season. All the engines are wore out.
Yeah.
And so, it's everything. Now, you really have a lot of things that are on the edge.
Well, actually, the other thing, too, with Berger's question, frankly, Weber doesn't want to get hit. Because once he's into the wall, he wants a nice, slow, quiet stop because he wants to be able to get the motor back out of the car.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And because he had the new motor.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, so it's very interesting. And, of course, the big question at Red Bull on team orders or team strategies. And Christian Horner refuses so far. He says, quote, "We have two fantastic drivers and we will continue to support both equally in line with Red Bull's credible sporting ethos." I think he's...
Well,
that's fine, because really he has to, because if you don't, then you're going to have one disgruntled employee who could be a problem.
Well, not only that, but the one disgruntled employee is your future.
Exactly. He's already admitted that the team is built around Sebastian Vettel and the future, knowing that Mark Webber could... Possibly, if he wins the championship, I would presume he might retire.
Yeah, it would be an excellent opportunity for him to do so.
I mean, not everybody wants to be Yarno Trulli and Rubens Barrichello.
Neither of which have won a world championship, so that's kind of their legacy for the sport.
Yeah, well, not only that, but they're not going to win a world championship. Even though I have to admit, with Braun GP, Rubens Barrichello probably came as close as he will in his twilight years in Formula 1.
Well, at this point in his career, that's the closest he's going to get.
That's it. It's pretty
unless for some miracle that Williams pulls out of their hat next season and gets truly competitive, that Pastor Maldonado money, gives them the ability to put down a truly competitive car. Not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. What's really fascinating is Rubens Barrichello and Yarno Trulli are going to get signed for next year.
Rubens almost certainly. And Yarno looks like he's probably in his seat at Lotus. So
yeah, they're still... Both of these teams are focused on development more than anything else.
Yeah.
So it's very fascinating, and I can't wait for Brazil. This week break that we're going to have here is actually good, so I can calm down.
Exactly. Kind of take some deep breaths next weekend.
Absolutely.
Just kind of
now. Yes, I do a little meditation and you know, un aleman and all that. also, there was some stuff going on. Jean Tut was in Korea, president of the FIA, of course. Oh. But he had a meeting with Rubens Barrichello, who is the chairman of the Grand Prix Drivers Association, and their directors, which happens to be Sebastian Vettel and Felipe Massa. So Rubens Barrichello, Felipe Massa, and Sebastian Vettel and Jean Todt all in a room, and they're talking about the drivers having more input into the changes of the rules in the future and the building of racetracks.
Not going to happen.
Well,
I could see maybe getting some input on the rules, but the track is so far away from, you know, they might have some input, but I seriously doubt. You know, Tilke's not going to go consult with a driver.
Well, he might. I think he would call Schumacher.
Yeah, if he's going to call anybody, he's going to, you know.
He's not going to call Rubinho?
Probably not. It'd be Michael or maybe, you know, K.K. Rosberg or, you know, one of the other German kids, one of the guys that, you know, kind of lived in Germany for a while.
I see.
Look at Ralph. He's cheap.
Well, Rubens Barrichello was happy with the meeting. He said it was very open. And there was a lot of discussion, and apparently Jean Todt said, we will listen to you, and we will keep an open mind.
Okay.
So everybody was happy with that meeting, so there you have it, Steve. You know, I'm just reporting the news, Steve, that's all. As fictional as it may seem.
As superfluous.
Correct. So, but I thought it was interesting, and I think Rubinho probably made some good points. The rule changes. I think it's a good idea to consult the drivers. They come up with some really strange stuff. Of course, next year, rear diffusers are out. KERS is back. And, you know, KERS with a full fuel tank is going to be something to deal with in itself.
Yeah, well, and no rear traction. It's like, ooh, that should be interesting.
So, I don't know. You know, I'm still not a really big fan of the kinetic
energy recovery system. I would be more happy if they would wait an extra year and go with a standardized, everybody gets the same unit type of deal instead of some cars have it, some cars don't.
I don't know. Some teams will probably develop a better one than others. There's a number of different routes you can take in engineering the recovery system, so it could be a lot of fun just to watch. And of course, next year we have Pirelli tires.
Ooh, new tires and extra weight. That should be interesting.
It's going to be exciting.
The softs have lasted a lap.
Well, we'll see what happens. You know, I don't know, but let's just keep our focus here on Brazil. That is going to be fun. Of course, Vitantonio Liuzzi fighting for his career. Had a really good drive in Korea.
Yeah, good race for
Vitantonio. And he's hoping to be on the Pirellis next year. And he's pretty pumped up. And he says that recent races, there have been a lot of speculation about my position, but as I've said before, this is my fifth year in Formula One, and I don't really care about that anymore. But for sure, it's still important to get results like this to show people that when the car is good, I am back in business. And that I'm fast. I don't make mistakes, and I'm always ready to take advantage of a chance when it comes along. So this race was not just for myself, but to show to others what I can do. And it's come at the right moment to show my potential. So there you have it. He's got the sales pitch out, the resumes going out, or the CVs, as they say in other countries. So Vitantonio, hoping.
Yeah, 50-50 chance I think that he's in a car.
I agree, 50-50 chance, I agree. It depends on what's going on.
Yeah, depends on what opens up. I could easily see him ending up as a reserve driver for somebody just because of his talent level and his experience.
Well, not only that, but you know, some of these drivers, and he's still fairly young, I'm sure it's got to be frustrating when the Rubens and the Jarno Trullis
don't move on.
Continue to hang in there.
Yeah.
Like an old man of the sea. They just, you just can't get rid of them. So
when those guys, they just keep coming back.
Well, those guys continue to hang on, and they're still young talent coming in from GP2 and other series.
Yeah.
So it makes it tough, and it, you know, I don't know. I think it's, I wish Vitantonio all the best, because and Adrian Sutil, he was hoping to go to Renault perhaps, or replace Schumacher at Mercedes Grand Prix, but none of that is going to happen.
No.
Vitaly Petrov is going to sign. Schumacher has signed a 3-year contract, and I know Schumacher will be there.
Yeah.
The car is being designed for Schumacher. I don't care if Rosberg out-qualified Schumacher all year in 2010. It doesn't matter. Schumi is still Schumi.
No.
He still has Ross Brawn on his side, and that car next year will be for Mr. Schumacher.
Yep.
And I believe me, they are the team to watch for 2011.
Well, they've had basically this year to develop, because they've been out of it almost since the get-go. So you know that they've been focused on that car for the, you know, put more into that car than this year's car.
And believe me, Schumacher has been at that factory helping this development. This car is going to fit him like a well-made Italian shoe or a German shoe. We'll see what
happens. Okay, Italian shoe, German glove.
Perhaps, but no, it's going to be exciting. I can't wait. There you have it. They're definitely going to be competitive next year.
Yeah.
And the big question is, can Renault carry that into 2011? And I'm still disappointed. I was hoping by now Robert Kubica would have a win. I was hoping in these last 6 or 5 races they had made some progress, but every time, and it always looks great in practice,
yeah,
but in qualifying, Robert Kubica has done well second row, third row, fourth row, but he can't get to the point of the spear, and I'm hoping they can do that and be the spoiler, you know, sort of ruin somebody's day.
Yep.
Especially, I mean, we have 2 more races to go, and Robert Kubica, if they just a couple more items on that car, he's so close.
Just get the right tweak so that he can get just that extra tenth out of it. Who knows, maybe in Brazil he steps up and is able to, you know, get himself in the second row and then make trouble for the leaders.
You mean Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel?
Exactly. Get himself in front of Fernando to mock up his race.
Yes, it's very possible. That should be very, very interesting. And, of course, Williams was looking pretty good. Toro Rosso, there's rumors that team is up for sale, Stephen.
As are there rumors of, was it Lotus or Virgin? Virgin is also available for the right price.
Oh, really? I didn't know that, Steve.
Yeah.
Did you get this out of the New York Times by any chance?
No, there were short discussions about William Branson wanting to, you know, either find a partner and or get out.
Okay, that's big news. Keep up the good work, Steve. But I wouldn't be surprised. Bernie predicted that one of these new teams wouldn't be on the paddock next year. We certainly know that Lotus is there. Of course, Lotus now officially having signed with the Renault package.
Ooh.
So they got the Red Bull gearbox. They got the Renault motor.
All they got to do is just lure Adrian Newey away.
Yes, exactly.
They could build a Red Bull.
Yeah. So, no, it should be interesting, but I expect them to do well. At least, you know, fighting with Toro Rosso.
They should be able to move themselves up into the second tier, so to speak.
Get closer to maybe Williams. It's going to be exciting.
And Toro Rosso and, you know, Force India get into that mix.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. I think they should be able to surpass Toro Rosso with a good gearbox and motor.
Yeah.
So that's going to be very, very fun to watch as well. But anyway, Brazil, it's coming. And I know we have another podcast before Brazil. But any thoughts on Brazil, Steve?
Looking forward to it. I'll be interested to see what the weather forecasts show, because I think a wet race will completely make things extra interesting. Dry race definitely favors the Red Bulls, but they've also shown that they can be competitive in the wet too. So if they can stay on the track and not explode, I'm looking forward to it, because now that the race for the championship is tightened up a little bit more, it's going to be even more interesting.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's going to be very exciting. My biggest issue with rain is now we've become mega safe. To be honest with you, we have seen much worse torrential downpours than what we saw in Korea. And I don't want to hear about the new sealed surface and no drainage. because that's crap, crap, crap. We've seen rain in China. We've seen rain in Fuji, which was much worse than this.
Well, the race in Fuji, they spent 80% of the race behind the damn safety car anyway.
Yes. But I think, you know, I don't know. But we've become a little bit too safe. The tracks are becoming too safe. And, you know, I know Charlie Whiting's got a tough job to do, but let's loosen up a little bit. And I liked Lewis Hamilton's attitude more or less most of the time.
Let's race.
Go racing. Exactly. It's not too dark. Everything is fine. Yeah. Let's go racing. So, you know, I think we should have more of that and less of this tippy-toeing around the tulips. So that's my personal opinion, Steve.
Well, not only that, but in Korea, if they'd let them go, they would have thinned themselves out fast enough to make it safe.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the line would have started drying off as the cars get up to speed. I think everything would have been fine, but there you have it. So we'll see what happens in Brazil anyway. We're going to take a quick break. We've got a lot of news in the Motorsports Mundial, as usual, and maybe a surprise or two. So we'll be back after this message from CoolAlbumOfTheDay.com.
Attention, music lovers. There's a website that will take you back to the music of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Check out CoolAlbumOfTheDay.com and relive some favorites. Every day, a new album is posted for your musical pleasure. There's everything from current hits to some off-the-wall titles. You'll find artists ranging from the Sex Pistols to Tom Waits. Something for everybody. So come visit CoolAlbumOfTheDay.com. That's CoolAlbumOfTheDay.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mundial and the king of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and a little Julio Fernando to celebrate his 26th Grand Prix win. And more importantly, taking the lead in the World Championship. Who would have thought? Only a few months ago, Ferrari team was talking about giving up on the 2010 campaign and concentrate on the 2011 car. Then came the Hockenheim high, controversial but very cunning. And Moa was at that race, as you know. That was in July. In 90 days, the prancing horse has pounced on both the bulls and galloped ahead. But the fight is not over.
Bravo, 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 bravo.
Exactly. The smile on Nando's face, I love that smile. When
you
he
do
was
like
there.
That
oh,
smile.
Absolutely.
All of a sudden, Oviedo is looking pretty good for vacation.
That is very true. The smile on Nando's face on the podium was speaking in many languages, but the message was all the same. This is my championship, baby. It could very well be. His partner in crime from the contentious 2007 season was standing next to him, both wondering if they can do to Red Bull what was done to them 3 years ago in Sao Paulo. You remember that, sir?
Yeah, exciting.
That's where the action is next on the schedule. If Nando wins again, if Nando wins in Sao Paulo,
it's over.
Season finale is a formality.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He is going to be in the top three or four, and that's it. And the Arabian Nights will belong to Nando. This I love it. I you know how much I like cage rattling.
Absolutely.
This has turned this whole thing upside down. But if any of the other combatants win, they are back in Binith. And we may have a hummus dinger in the Arabian Desert. What say you, Senor Second Coming of Oviedo?
I think you're right. But this could be settled this weekend without any rose water. We're talking Brazil and some quality alcoholic beverages. So, no, this is going to be fun. And if Fernando stays focused like he has, and it looks like he's... I think Ferrari's really got it all together at the end of the season where You could see once again Red Bull, Kablamo, Mark Webber crashing. They got it all backwards.
Yeah.
And of course McLaren is struggling for pace. Look what happened to Jenson Button.
Yes.
And we have Felipe Massa on the podium doing his job, grabbing points from other drivers. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. You know, my feeling at the start, by the way, I was getting so tired and was so sleepy. I was just going to go to sleep. And I said, you know, let's just see what happens, you know.
You never know what
happens. You never know. But my feeling at the start was Webber should let Nando go and chase Vettel, because Nando was looking for blood. And if he had caught up to Vettel, nobody's interested in second place, especially between these two. They were tied on points anyway. There could have been some scrap metal from both cars. But as it turned out, it came from the wreck of Webber. And in the nick of time, Nico was knocked out also by Webber's Red Bull. Speaking of Massa, third man on the podium was fairly subdued. Perhaps still suffering from German measles, or was it the sting of Spanish flea at Hockenheimring? Only Nando knows, and he ain't telling. He's just smiling. And talking of Nando, let's hear from the winner, courtesy of BBC.
Yeah, it's been a strange race. Obviously, very difficult to start with. Conditions, visibility-wise, very bad. So red flag, and then some doubts of when restart and how the circuit will be. So conditions didn't change when we restart, so we spent a couple of laps behind the safety car, and then everything cleans, and we saw Webber's problem, which of course changed our strategy for the race. Just finishing the race was enough for us at that point, but obviously when Sebastian had the problem, was another gift, so we took it.
Okay, now Mark is getting a lot of flack that he did that on purpose. He should have stopped the car, but he wanted to take Hamilton or somebody else out. Who knows what the truth is? What say you?
I think that's ludicrous, to be honest with you. Mark Webber is the consummate professional. And to be honest with you, I don't even think those kinds of thoughts come into his mind. He is that loving and innocent. That's my impression.
Yeah, I don't know what the truth is.
You know, for Gerhard Berger to insinuate these things is pretty shocking in itself.
You know
Gerhard better than I do.
Well, he's a Red Bull crony, and you know Sebastian Vettel is. That's what some people are saying. You know, Red Bull being owned by German-speaking people, they want to see their own guy Sebastian Vettel win. But you know, talking of consummate professional, this and that, and I shall never forget the comment from Frank Montani that racing drivers don't like to follow orders, let alone crash a racing car, when the Singapore saga has not been exposed. So you never know. But I think it's very unfair to make a comment like that without knowing the facts.
I agree.
Because we don't know what happened to Scott. I remember some years ago, you know, so I'm sure some of our listeners would know, there was a race, I believe, in Florida. It was like a championship decider or something like that. And this guy, what's his name, Scott Dixon, had a crash. And then it looked like he had the car was going to stop, and then somebody was coming in. All of a sudden, his car came back and screwed up the other guy also. And he says, no, it's just, you know, the car was out of my control after the crash. There's nothing I could do. Well, you know, so we'll see.
We talked about this briefly in the first one. One, he hits the wall, which means he probably has no brakes.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you've torn off one wheel, you've got no hydraulics. So him being able to stop the car, even if he'd wanted to, was probably beyond the point.
And it all happened.
Yeah, and then also, considering how slick the track was, even if he was able to apply the brakes, he probably would have kept sliding anyway.
But Nico was looking very good.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. Anytime you can pass Lewis Hamilton, you're looking good.
And Lewis Hamilton was struggling there at the beginning.
Yeah.
It was interesting, and Nico took advantage of it, which was great.
Yeah. But you can see the difference between Lewis Hamilton and Jenson Button as the season is.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
You mean
which was expected? Which was expected?
It was expected. It's just Jenson Button is a good driver.
He's a world champion.
But when he has issues with the car, it affects him a little bit more than it does Lewis Hamilton. I think Lewis Hamilton is a lot like Fernando.
Really? He is.
Probably too much like Fernando.
Yeah,
that's why they couldn't get
the problem. That's where the problem is.
There you go.
Yeah, and I tell you what, man, What happened with Lewis and Weber in Singapore, that to me was a racing incident. The guy totally had passed him, and it just, you know, bad luck had hit him. He hit Weber and got out of the race. But that Monza thing, that was his own stupidity. I mean, when you have lost the championship in your rookie year by sliding into gravel and having gearbox issues because you went off track and on the curve, this and that should be on your mind. You know, all you have to do, he would be thick of things right now if he had finished the Monza race. But that's motor racing, you know. There was a very nice interview somewhere on the web with Giancarlo Minardi, and he's coming to the defense of Weber. And he says, you know, this is how the wheel of Formula One turns. First some team made a mistake, then somebody else, and Lewis, and now Weber. He said during the course of the season, you have to pay your own bills. So you know what that means, right? Mm. So it's very interesting. And who do you think is going to win?
Fernando.
You think so?
Yeah.
What do you think, Mr.
Fong? I think it's still up in the air. If Fernando can play well in Sao Paulo, then he's probably going to get it. But the domination of the Red Bulls as far as locking out the front row, you've got to leave them in the mix.
You know what I think?
Let them block. Let the Red Bulls take the front row.
I tell you.
Yeah, but if Weber wins, then Fernando's got trouble. Well, even if Vettel wins, theoretically, Fernando may have trouble.
No,
they usually make their own trouble.
Exactly. Yeah,
I think if Red Bull does not get behind Sebastian Vettel, Mark Webber, this is Nando's championship. I'll tell you why I say this. Like he said, Red Bull will pretty much lock up the front row, okay? If Webber wins, then obviously he has a very good chance of winning in Abu Dhabi, the world championship. But if Sebastian Vettel wins, and let's just say Mark Webber is second and Nando is third, going into the final race, what motivation will Mark have to finish ahead of Nando so Vettel can become world champion? Racing drivers are very selfish and mean.
And don't forget, Fernando and Mark Webber are very good friends.
I know that, and they have the same manager.
Exactly.
And
bravo.
Because the blood between Vettel and Webber has gone to the extent, I don't know if you remember this, British Grand Prix was just before the German Grand Prix, right? And Mark Webber had made a statement that we definitely don't want to see the German national anthem being played in Germany.
So, I'm telling you, it's going to get bitter.
Yeah.
You know, and we might even see Nelson Piquet Jr. in the paddock with a stick running after Vettel trying to hit him in the leg.
Oh. Oh. I don't know if Jeff Kaluli is. Remember Jeff Kaluli?
Yeah.
If he is a Grand Prix fan.
There you go.
Anyway, so now we come to Magical Numbers, sponsored by Arthur Anderson. They know how to put numbers in the pipeline.
I like Arthur Anderson.
Yeah, of course. Who doesn't? Additional information furnished by F1 Weekly's European executive in charge, Mr. Peter Brazier, also known as Ye on the forum. Does Ye have the... Is he in the Guinness Book of Records for putting the most postings on our forum?
He's in the F1 Weekly Book of Records.
Yes, correct. And that would be Ye with three A's, not two A's. He shortchanged them.
Apologies. So it's Ye.
Exactly. Thank you very much.
The numbers are 450. Number of podium finishes for McLaren since the 1968 Spanish Grand Prix when Denny Holm of New Zealand finished second. Very impressive. 66. Number of possible points. This I took from Autosport. Give them credit where it's due. Number of possible points lost by Bastian since Bahrain. He was leading the season opener when spark plug issues allowed Alonso to win on his Ferrari debut, a la Kimi Raikkonen. Vettel would finish fourth in this race. You remember the Bahrain Grand Prix? Oh, everybody after that race
saying, it was called the Sleepy Grand Prix.
Yeah, boring Grand Prix. Bahrain, they were calling it.
Bahrain.
And what, I mean, I don't recall a season like this in many. This is even better than 2007.
Almost
at least 2007, you know who the players were. Right now, it's just like yin-yang, you know?
Yeah, we saw a lot of Felipe's Papa in 2007.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it was Nicole Scherzinger also there quite a bit.
Yeah.
That red dress was pretty awesome in 2008, I have to say. In Australia, Vettel was again leading when a wheel problem sidelined him. In Barcelona, Bastian was running second when brake problems developed and he was passed by Nando and finished third. And the Kablamo in Korea, it's like waiting round the bend, my huckleberry friend, Moon River and Muy Macho Nando. Nando's glory is meaning Vettel's misery.
Yeah. Exactly. Vettel looks in the mirrors, and all of a sudden, here comes Nando.
Yeah, he looks in his mirrors, oh no, Nando's behind me again. Something's going to go wrong.
As the oil pressure light on his steering wheel starts flickering.
Yeah. Hopefully, if Nando wins the championship, he will invite the entire Red Bull team to breakfast at Tiffany's. And how would you like your omelette, Mr. Rogers?
Oh, I like it all fluffy. And
souffle?
Yeah.
With some jalapenos?
Mmm.
Yes.
And it has to be made in a copper pan.
Good, good. I think we can arrange that.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. And it has to come from Mont Saint-Michel.
Wow, I'm sure there's a Denny's in your neighborhood.
Thank you.
Okay, talking of numbers, 10,000. That is the number of dollars Adrian Sutil has been fined for crashing into the crash expert Kamui Kobayashi. Kamui Kobayashi has got to be the most popular driver in Formula One now.
Probably, I would think so. Just for being outlandishly crazy.
Yes, he is. I mean, those two races he did with Toyota, that was amazing.
It was amazing, and he's doing amazing things now. Yeah.
And then the race in Japan, excuse me, pardon me.
I love it when all of a sudden he decides, oh, I gotta go.
Yeah, like a friend of mine used to say, excuse me, some of us are racing.
Yeah.
And he made some very daring passes, very impressive. 9, number of pole positions for Sebastian Vettel. 3 is the number of the poles converted to victories. This is these kind of stats you have when you have a very fast car, but it's unreliable. Lots of pole position, but DNF.
Classic Newey.
Yeah, but this is pretty bad.
McLaren in 06.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was bad. That was bad. I remember in one race, the right rear view mirror fell off. In the second race.
Oh, that was Juan Pablo Montoya's car. Yeah.
Then in the next race, one of the left horns.
Yeah.
Well, one of the horns falls off. Yeah. It's like,
oh yeah, I remember the horn falling off. Yeah.
And then Kimi would start at the back of the grid and race up to second. It's like,
yeah. And then they even had a car that was never raced.
Oh really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It fell apart before it got there.
Yeah.
Came apart in the paddock.
Okay, now we talk 12 million or Mas. That is the number of dollars Pastor Maldonado is reported to be bringing to Williams to take Nico Hülkenberg's seat. Now, you know, we put on on our front page the other day, Grand Prix Plus magazine, which is, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the free edition of Hungarian Grand Prix, very detailed, very in-depth, and it's put out by Joe Sewell, very well-respected, very well-known journalist. I was reading his blog, and he said he heard from a very reliable source at the factory that regardless of all the rumors about Pastor, Nico is going to stay with the team. But now that Pastor Maldonado is testing in Abu Dhabi, that plus the news I read, that, and this was on the web, that Adam Paul, who I believe is now the CEO of Williams Racing, he was last week in Caracas, Venezuela, signing up the deal. I just have a very strong feeling that Nico is out of Williams, which will be amazing.
They need money.
Oh, yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah, they're losing AirAsia. They're losing Philips. So they need to shave the dollars. Shave it to the bones, as my friend used to say.
Now, it's a sad state of affairs that a team as great as Williams is now going to pay drivers. But what can you do?
Yeah. Okay, 35. Podium finish. 35 is the number of podium finishes for Hamilton in his, what, fourth year? And same as Fangio and Freddie Pauly. That's a very impressive company, I must say. This kid has a lot of racing left in his eyes and in his talents and his skills.
I would be interested to see how many races it took Fangio and Freddie Pauly to get the 35.
Fangio did not do a lot of races. And but like Sterling Moss said, you know, he was smart enough to always put himself in the best car. You know, even if you're in the best car, you have to be good.
And they had less races annually.
But that's what I'm thinking is, you know, maybe a little bit more impressive because you didn't get 20 opportunities in a season in a good car.
Yeah, yeah.
You got 12.
Yeah. 187 plus tax. Repeat. 187 number of starts for Jenson Button, same as R. Nige.
Well, he's been around for a while.
Yeah, R9 was classic, I'll tell you. One of the characters of motor racing for me always would be him, James Hunt, you know, of course, all the great drivers. But he was something special. Okay, number 10, my perfect 10. Number of laps led by race winner in Korea, Fernando Alonso. Interestingly, safety car driver Bernd Meilander led more laps than Nando. But Bernd Meilander is not going to be world champion.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he's not. He is not going to be having lunch with King Juan Carlos in Madrid.
No, he won't.
Now, some royal paella. Man, I'll tell you, if Nando wins this championship, it will be just super, super incredible. Because this car, the package he has compared to Red Bull, like a friend of mine, I was chatting with him on the web the other day, and he said if Nando was driving this Red Bull car, this championship would have been decided by now. And I believe that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Yeah, it's amazing. And 68, number of tracks that have hosted Formula One races. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is very interesting.
And a few more are coming from Austin, Texas to
Russia?
Calcutta, India. No, actually, New Delhi and Sochi and who knows.
Sofi and
in Alma-Ata, Astana, Cabinda.
Paris.
Yeah. Paris? Paris, London. Texas will have a Grand Prix.
Yeah,
before.
They'll have a
Paris,
Grand Prix
France.
Before Paris, France. Yeah, yeah, that's for sure. France is out.
Yeah.
They've been fired.
Yeah. And you know why I was able to do a digital dialogue with Adrian Tambay, son of Patrick Tambay, and he responded to my question, so we're going to put that on the web in the next few days. And as he is evaluating his options for
good,
next year,
good.
So that'll be good. And we have a supplemental, as you would call it.
A supplemental?
Some quick results on some of your favorite people and series. Let's take a look here. Sprint, the Chase Cup is, you know, I think...
Oh, this is one of your favorite series.
Yeah, only a few races are remaining. Last weekend, they were in Martinsville. Denny Hamlin was the winner. And
now, that's a short track, isn't it?
Yes. Now, you're a closet NASCAR fan. I read a news item. What's so funny?
Nothing. I started picturing the point system. Excuse me.
No.
I know they're like 5,484 right now.
That's okay. It is what it is. But it's more important. I read a news item that NBC is working on a NASCAR drama or soap opera. Something in the works based on NASCAR.
I mean, like a reality show or just
like a daily soap.
Like a serial.
Yeah. I think it's like more like a serial. Let's see. So NASCAR is, it's big. It's
so
huge.
So it's going to be like, who shot Greg Biffle?
Something like that.
That's
would be
good.
Neat if they used the real names and had actors playing them. That would be even more fun.
Yeah, that would be even better.
NASCAR is more popular in the United States than you give credit to the series. But you know, on some bad, sad news, because you never want to see these things, projects, big projects failing. They recently opened the Hall of Fame in Charlotte, North Carolina. And apparently business has gone down where in the city of Charlotte put up a lot of money, took a lot of loans. As usual, taxpayers get the shaft. And there is talk now that if this thing continues, they may go out of business.
No way.
Seriously, it was in the news. Check it out.
The NASCAR Hall of Fame in America go out of
Charlotte,
business?
Charlotte,
that would be like saying that they're going to close the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Not only that, but they haven't even opened a year yet. Didn't they have enough funds to run the place for at least a couple of years before they opened it?
You have to ask them, but this was in the news. And
maybe they should advertise on our podcast.
They should.
I'm sure it's a big topic in the election in Charlotte.
Let's do a sample of an NASCAR ad.
Clark Rogers. I wouldn't know how to participate in that sort of stuff.
Well, you can say, I'm Billy Bob Rogers.
Yeah, but see, that would be insulting a lot of people out there. We have listeners that like NASCAR now.
Oh, come on, you've lived in Florida. You can do yourself.
And I respect these listeners.
You do.
They do eat chitlins and hush puppies and okra. But nevertheless.
I reckon.
I do
you
reckon.
Are BSing me.
Y'all.
You is BSing me.
I is.
Okay. Now let's check on to some other sports series before we get our digital sling and arrow.
Yes, dude, the emails, they can hear the typewriters.
Rolling in right now.
Yeah, Remington typewriter?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, let's take a look here what we should do. You know this Dutch kid I interviewed recently, Hannes van Hasseldonk? He is really on fire in this Formula Bart series. He did 3 weekends of racing and won 3 races. Last one was recently at Monza. So he's doing very good. The FIA GT Championship race took place in Spain, and our old friend Ricardo Zonta won that race.
Good for him.
Yeah. And World Rally Championship. Do I need to say who won that?
We don't need to talk about that.
There you go. Sebastian Loeb. And what else is going on?
Well, don't forget Loeb also won the following race in Catalonia in Spain, not letting up. Unbelievable machismo. And I thought some people thought he was going to let other people win. Mm-hmm. Forget it.
No, yeah. not if he's going to retire. He's going to go out with a bang.
And you know what? They've built a new track in Spain, Navarra.
Of course.
Okay. And I was looking at the layout just before I came here of the track. And then, you know, some years ago, they built this track in some part of Argentina, which is right next to a volcano or a lake or something. And of course, Portimão in Portugal is done. First thing is, when you look at a track, you know, if it impresses you, you know it's not designed by Tilke. Isn't that amazing? I looked at that Navarra, it looked pretty good. It was not the usual straight line, you know, turn like this, boom, back. And these countries, these places are not spending that kind of money that they do with Tilke drones.
No, that is the interesting thing, is nothing like the kind of money that you need to build a Tilke track.
Yeah.
But you can't get a Formula One race unless you build a Tilke track anymore.
Yeah, of course. What did you think of the Korean track?
I thought it was good. To be honest with you, I thought it was good. The layout was interesting. Of course,
I liked it.
A lot of people talked about the pit entrance. But on the other hand, even though it was called Mickey Mouse, I thought it added a little excitement.
Part of it reminded me of the Valencia street circuit, you know, the cranes, mm-hmm. and one that portion which was right by the wall.
Right.
Cars coming. But it's good to have Formula One motor racing.
It is. And we only have 2 more races, so you better love it and cherish it.
No, of course, and there is a lot of things go on in nowadays. You know, in November there is I'm glad you brought that up, because in November next month is the Macau F3 race, very famous, and Valtteri Bottas, who is the Williams test driver, he is also taking part in that race. So and then, you know, I think the Dakar starts in January.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
So there's stuff to keep us busy, huh?
Yeah.
So we keep podcasting.
Well, hopefully. That's the plan. Excellent. And we've been doing this since like 2006 now.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Actually, November of 2005, our anniversary is coming up, 5 years,
oh, really?
Next month.
Wow.
What are you going to buy me?
Well, another PBR.
Thank you.
And now that we know how much you like NASCAR.
It'll be a PBR tall boy.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, Nasser.
And a Bob's Big Boy cheeseburger.
No, I love those.
I'm sure
you know. I think we're drifting here now. The boat is afloat, and the sails are broken. The motor's down.
Oh, my goodness.
We're drifting.
Do we have, like, a surprise?
Do we have a surprise?
Yeah, we have a conversation that took place at Clermont-Ferrand with Monsieur Yannick Dalmas.
Michelin testing grounds?
Yeah, and because of some of their work, I could not go and walk on the track. But
of
that's
course,
okay.
They had secret stuff going on.
Yeah, I know.
No cameras, no funny business.
They tell you, okay, the start is this width, and we're going to make you win the race, and just don't measure the tire again. That was classic. I loved
it. Those were in the rules.
That was in the rules. That was just like the diffuser last year.
I love that stuff. That was some of my favorite racing right there. Michelin, Bridgestone,
that's
Nando.
Nando got his first win there.
Oh, yeah. That was exciting.
I remember that podium very well because I watched this race back home. It was Nando, Montoya, and Raikkonen. I'm not sure who was second. I think Raikkonen was second. And Michael Schumacher was lapped, if you recall.
Oh, a lap. Everybody likes a lap, Michael Schumacher.
Yeah.
Even this year when Mark Webber lapped Michael Schumacher, he enjoyed it and mentioned it.
Oh, wow. Good
for him. So that's fascinating. So, surprise interview, Clermont-Ferrand.
Yes, sir.
So you interviewed the track.
No, Yannick Dalmas.
Ah, here we go. We've got a name.
Yeah. You know, it was so interesting. I was there, and they had some old pictures, and they had a meeting going on there, and there was like a break. So I was looking at the guy, one of the team managers there. He says, we have some pictures. So I'm looking, and they have a picture of very young, like there's a picture of Jean-Pierre Jabouille and this and that. So he turns around, he says to some guy in French, this guy's from California. So this guy comes up to me, and he says, you have a very nice track in California. I was there once. So I said, which one we have? One north of San Francisco, one south of San Francisco. He says, I don't remember the name. I said, Laguna Seca. He said, oh, yeah, that one. So I said, are you a racing journalist or a fan? He says, I'm a racing driver. I said, what's your name, pal? He says, Yannick Dalmas. So I said, oh, cool. So we had a nice conversation. It was very nice. And he's from the southern part of France. At least he lives near Paul Ricard. And I had to ask him, you know, what he enjoys when he's racing in America. You know, the usual hot dog or cheeseburgers. And he surprised me.
Pizza?
You have to listen, Mr. Rogers.
There you go.
It starts with P and comes from Italy.
Thank you, Ness.
Welcome.
For another outstanding motorsports mondial, and of course, with the interview.
Okay, folks, what a surprise we have here at Clermont-Ferrand in France. I'm here with ex-Grand Prix driver Yannick Dalmas. Yannick, great to see you here, and how are you today?
Thank you. Great to see you, too. And I'm happy. Thank you.
What brings you to Clermont-Ferrand today?
I was there now for many weeks because I try and I work for to get the diploma, the French diploma BPJEPS, you know, for my activity and my future activity.
Okay. Now, France, of course, is the home of motor racing. You have Le Mans, you had Reims, and so many other beautiful tracks. How old were you when you got interested in motor racing?
Motor racing. I worked in motor racing now for 30 years, 10 years in motorcycle, and 20 years in racing car.
How old were you when you first got interested in motor racing?
I was very young, probably 10 years old. Mm-hmm. I saw the first race. It was motocross. Mm-hmm. And my father asked me, you would like to do that? He said, why not? And I started some months later, and that's it.
Okay. And when did you switch to racing on four wheels? And you probably did some kartings first?
No karting. Only motorcycle. And I stopped motorcycle because I broken so many times the legs, the arms, everything. And I decided to go in motor racing. I got the school. I won the school, driving school, and I started like that.
And what part of France are you from?
Southern France, near to Le Castellet, between Marseille and Toulon. I don't know if you see the...
I'm very familiar with the area. Paul Ricard is one of my favorites. Yeah. When was the first time you went to Paul Ricard?
I think it was just in the beginning of the construction of the circuit Paul Ricard, the year 17, probably when the track started to burn. Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about your junior karting before you got to Formula One. What did you do?
Before Formula One, I was in different categories. It was Formula Renault, Formula 3, Formula 2000, and Formula One. And the go-kart, before, I never been in go-kart. I just started motorcycle, and after I jumped from motorcycle to kart directly.
When you were in Formula Renault and Formula 3, you know, before you got to Formula 1, what were some of the drivers you raced against?
Okay, it was Alesi, Jean Alesi. It was...
Was he crazy in Formula Junior also?
It was strong too, yes. Yes, it was not crazy, it's not the correct word, but it was very aggressive and very strong, yes. Yeah.
Also very emotional?
Difficult to say because you know each driver you are in concurrence. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay. We was friends, but not we work on the same categories, and we want to win. I want to win the race, sure. And he want to win, and sure. It was the fight, but nice fight.
Okay. Who are other drivers?
Other drivers. International, it was Martini, Modena, Stefano Modena, mm-hmm. It was Sala, it was many drivers.
And where was your first Grand Prix?
My first Grand Prix, it was sorry, but it was in Mexico, my first Grand Prix, 1987, Mexico, Japan, and Australia.
How did you like the Mexican track?
It was very impressive. Yeah. Yes, on this time the track was very impressive, specifically the last corner before the pits. It was unbelievable, difficult to take this corner. Yeah.
And what were the other times you drove in Formula One and what teams?
It was the team Larousse.
That's what I thought.
The team Larousse, French team. And on this time, it was many drivers, Mansell, Senna, Piquet, Prost, Berger. It was a strong team and strong drivers, yeah.
Did you get to know personally people like Ayrton Senna and Alain Prost?
I know them. I know Prost, but not personally, not friendly. Mm-hmm. Just a normal relationship. Mm-hmm. I had some very special time when Senna come to Paris to make the go-kart, Bercy go-kart. Yeah. And I had some times with him. Very special time.
How did you find him as a person off the track?
Fantastic person. Yes, really fantastic person for me. It was a disaster when he had the big accident. Yeah. It was a very nice man. Really nice man.
Good to hear. Now, Larousse had quite a few characters there. Where is Didier Calmels these days? Was he involved? Did you get to know him? Did you work with him?
Yes, I work with him. I work from in the end of the year 87, 88, and in middle of 89. And for me, I had no problems with Didier Calmels. It was a nice man for the job, for the mm-hmm. personality, you know. But after, you know the problems, and it was difficult for him, sure. But
life goes on.
Yes.
Do you know where he is or what he's doing these days? Does he have any involvement in racing now?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know, sorry.
And where is my man, Gérard Larousse?
Gérard Larousse, it's...
He had some problems with Alain Prost, right?
Yeah. It's a life.
Yeah.
It's a life.
How was he to work with?
You know, my time in Formula One with them, in the beginning of the cooperation, it was nice. And we had some fight together, and my relationship was in the end not so good. Mm-hmm. But the men make a big job, you know. And he worked for Renault a long time. He had the proper teams, mm-hmm. Big experience, and it was famous person.
Yeah, very famous. Do you know what he's doing these days, or any involvement in racing?
I think he make a old vehicle, VHC, historic vehicles. Yes, and probably this year at Le Mans. He will do the race from the historic vehicle. Yeah,
and you also race in sports car racing, and you won Le Mans, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
Okay. How much did you enjoy? First of all, is sports car racing Le Mans much less pressure than Formula One? And how much did you enjoy sports car racing?
I think the pressure at Le Mans, it's a very big pressure, very very big pressure, because you know the characteristic at Le Mans. For the drivers, for the team, you have the old positive or negative things. I mean, for the drivers, you need to be fast. You need to be reliable. You need to be constant. You need to be clever, concentrated during 24 hours. You know. Not half hours or 1 hour. Mm-hmm. And you need to make very careful with your car, because you don't drive alone the car. You drive with three other co-drivers, you know. Mm-hmm. And you need to make very careful to be very safe with the car, with the team. It's a big step.
If
I remember, you drove the McLaren car, right?
Yes.
McLaren-powered BMW, right?
Yes.
How was that car, and did you had any dealings with Ron Dennis?
Yeah. We work with a factory McLaren, with Ron Dennis. The car was very fast and straight. We had a very low downforce, very fast on the straight. Very difficult to drive the car, but we won with this car. Yeah. And the weather condition was very difficult on this year, on 1995. Mm-hmm. And I think the weather helped us, because you make a stable the difference between the sport prototype and the GT cars. But the race itself was very fantastic for me. Of course, we won the Le Mans on this time with this car, but Le Mans, it's magic.
Yeah. What's it, how much magic is going 200 miles per hour on the Mulsanne?
Yes, minimum. Minimum
for 200, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, you have raced in the United States also. How much do you enjoy racing in America, and your favorite track in the United States?
I won. I work. I drove at Sebring. We won Sebring. We ran to Daytona. The track is different. The public is different, but the passion in America, from the spectators, from the enthusiasm, from the from America, it's bigger too. You know, I enjoy my time in America. And in France, of course, in France, at Le Mans, I have more success. But anyway, it's life.
Yeah. We do our show from California, not too far from Laguna Seca. You've raced there. What do you think of that track and the corkscrew?
It's a fantastic track. I like Laguna Seca. Very difficult track. And you need a minimum 20 laps to learn very well the track, because the track is not easy, very difficult, very different, but very for the driver, it's a fantastic track. I like very much Laguna Seca.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question we ask all European and non-American drivers who come and race there. What do you prefer when you're in America, Le hot dog or cheeseburgers?
To be honest, I prefer pasta from Italy, but cheeseburger, it's okay.
Okay, no problem. Thank you so much for your time. Finally, can you give a message to our listeners? We have listeners all over the world. Anything you want to say to them?
I wish strong life, happiness for everybody. I hope the problems with the petrol at the moment, it's a big thing for America and for the planet, for the ecologic problems. And I hope and I wish big to find the problems. It's my wish today for America.
Thank you very much.
Yannick, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now let's go right to the wrap-up with the forum updates.
Forum updates brought to you this week by Koala. Thank you, Koala. The forum has been as active as ever. The Korean F1 GP has come and gone with the Red Bull results, as barren as the track that surrounds Korea. The track was generally considered to be a good one, but the delay is causing great angst amongst many of the European forum members who rose very early on Sunday morning to see the race. Weber supporters were left lamenting what might have been, while the Tifosi have entered a heightened state of excitement. A number of forum members had a very active Skype chat running prior to, during, and after the race. If you are interested in joining us, there are details in the forum or PMR chat conveyor. None other than yay. The forum prediction competition continues. Korea was a low-scoring round, with Weber and Vettel both going out. Lion Bray topped the predictions with 115, followed by Mallory and Tricky Dick with 101. Standings after Korea, Starfleet 76 on 18-16, Rathump on 18-13, and Koala on 18-10. The Korean quali, race, and the he and the 50 words or less Summertarian thread on Korea were very active. Ye also took time out from his very busy schedule to inform the forum that in no uncertain terms of his dislike of the BBC commentator Jonathan Legard. Discussion of possible end of season driver changes have started to make an appearance in the forum, with much discussion centering around the futures of Hulkenberg at Williams and Petrov at Renault. The English Daily Mail articles on the life and antics of James Hunt continue to provoke discussion. Off-topic threads have also been active, including the Countryside thread, as ever, including Dr. Mark F's providing us with more pictures of his holly trip to Japan. Forum members continue to be amazed at the leave benefits enjoyed by the British medical establishment. It has also been drawn to my attention that there have been no posts to the pit page thread since the 20th of July, and forum members are called on to rectify this oversight. That's it for the update this week. We now have 818 members, with our latest member, Isaac, joining on the 26th. New members are always welcome. We are a friendly bunch, and it is a great opportunity to discuss hot topics in Formula One with people who also love Formula One. Thank you, Koala.
Thank you, Stephen. The new 2011 Motorsports Memories Calendar Americana available. You order, and it ships the following day. That is the policy here at F1 Weekly, and we don't beat around the calendar. We also have a few F1 Weekly caps available. Email me if you want one. CoolAlbumOfTheDay.com. Check it out. You know you want to. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2011 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Check it out. CameronKarting.com. MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter. We're all there. Do a search for F1 Weekly and make us a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, simply email us at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.